You are listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards. Of course, check out Veritas Medical. We can help you out there. Got a lot of great information, veritasmedical.com. Whether it's past archived programs or just general information about our practice, right there, Veritas Medical. Well, what is in store for us today on the show, Dr. Edwards?
Well, last week I was interviewed on another podcast. Actually, it was Brooke Wagner and Emily Edwards. We had them on our show a few months ago. They're a physical therapist down in Austin. Emily's my sister. But they're starting kind of a sister podcast to You're the Cure. Theirs is called The Art of Wellness.
Nice.
And it's going to all be about the practical application. You know, we try to sort of tell the why and the science behind the way we practice at Veritas and why we believe what we believe. The Art of Wellness is going to be more the practical application. How do you do this thing? So it was a great interview. I enjoyed talking with them. And it got me motivated to go through the four pillars. Kind of take a show on today. We'll do nutrition, but I kind of want to hit each pillar. And from the mindset of someone that's kind of new to this, and maybe isn't quite sure why does food matter? Why?
Yeah.
What's this four pillar thing? And also, we're going to be launching Veritas Wellness, which will be an online wellness curriculum, and our wellness navigators will be available for one-on-one consultations with folks to help them walk through this change in their lifestyle. So these four pillar podcasts will be a good complement to those. Also, but that interview just really got me fired up thinking about the millions of people out there who are clueless. And I just got re-motivated on the drive in this morning. There was a billboard, the American Diabetes Association. Seems like I always pick on them, but they're worth picking on. And it was an advertisement about help us fight diabetes and send us some money. And maybe I didn't read the billboard that closely. They may have been promoting some. I think there was some fundraising deal recently. And don't get me wrong, I'm not about trying to help diabetics. In fact, that's what upsets me so much, is managing diabetes is not the best option. You are not doing these folks a favor by just offering management, and we're not doing our pocketbooks a favor by donating money to an organization that's only going to, quote-unquote, research. I don't even know exactly how many dollars go to research, but they're going to go to research management. We don't need to manage something that's reversible, and I'm talking type 2 diabetes. Type 1 is autoimmune, totally different animal, so we'll stick with, when I say diabetes today, is type 2. And we've talked to Jason Fung. We need to get him back on. I keep saying that. But, I just say Jason Fung because he's kind of the world's most vocal voice in this reverse diabetes mantra. Deal with insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes goes away. But if you're just going to manage it with drugs, all you're dealing with is high blood sugar, and you're never going to get well, and you're going to still suffer from the consequences of high blood sugar even when you're managing it. And that's based off a study out of Mayo Clinic. Management of blood sugar still increases your, or doesn't mitigate the risk of all the bad complications, heart attack, stroke, cancer, amputation, kidney failure, blindness, all the bad things that happen. So I'm just highly motivated to educate people, and there's millions of people out there that need educated and need the truth. So the nutrition pillar, that's the low-hanging fruit. That's the kind of the least common denominator. That's the milk, if you're going to look at biblically. Paul talking about, people need the meat, but they're only ready for the milk. And so that's how I look at nutrition, because I will just put a plug for the peace pillars. Our listeners know that's my number one pillar. And if you're stressed to the max, nutrition, hydration, movement aren't going to matter that much. But that's down the road. We'll dive deeper into that. So people that are brand new to this fact that food matters, diet matters, your lifestyle matters, Western diseases are rooted in diet and lifestyle. If this is totally new to you, you need convincing, and nutrition is always the easiest place to start. So I like to talk about food from the standpoint of kind of think of food in different categories. There's raw materials. The food you put in your mouth are raw materials to build new cells. You can also think of food as being the source of all the cofactors, we'll call them, for all the chemical reactions that go on in your body. You know, you've got to make thyroid hormone. You've got to build new bone cells. You've got to, I mean, there's a gazillion chemical reactions. You've got to make energy. Every cell of your body's got to make energy. It's also got to clear the free radicals, the exhaust. So all these chemical reactions are happening in your body. Well, chemical reactions need cofactors. These are vitamins and minerals that allow these chemical reactions to go. If you remember back in chemistry class, you have a beaker, and you put in some solution to that beaker, and then boom, you add a little powder or something else, and explosion happens. I mean, these chemical reactions go on in the body, but the little powder you're adding, the cofactors you're adding, the enzymes you're adding to actually make the thing go, it's like pulling the trigger, these are found from your food. Third category is fuel. You can think of food going in your mouth as the fuel that gives you the energy to function. And kind of the fourth category is thinking of food as the nourishment to your microbiome. The microbiome is the term we use for all the different organisms that live in your gut, although there's also organisms that live in your mouth and your ears and your anus and your skin and your even the cloud around you. There's bacteria that are unique to you. It's like a fingerprint. You have your own blend, your own makeup and special combination of all these different critters, all these different organisms, and this beautiful balance is supposed to be there, and it actually impacts your cellular health. These bugs, these microbes, especially in the gut, secrete chemicals and signals that talk to your cells and actually turn certain genes on and off. It's incredible. So you want to think about food going in your mouth as, is this nourishing my microbiome or is it killing my microbiome? And in general, with all these categories, raw materials, cofactors, fuel, microbiome, you need to think about, is this food nourishing me or killing me? Food's either going to heal you or kill you, I like to tell people. And most Americans are totally stuck in the mindset of food doesn't really matter. It's just calories. It's all about calories. Calories in, calories out. If I eat more than I burn, I'm going to gain weight. And if I eat less than I'll lose weight. And it's just all about calories and weight, which is so not true. And maybe we'll have time to get into what really causes you to gain weight. But let's start with category one, raw materials. And just remind everybody that our 70 trillion cells that make up your body, every cell, your brain cell, your eyeball cells, liver cells, red blood cells, hamstring cells, bone cells, testicular and ovary cells, whatever cell you can think of, these cells die all the time. And you make new ones all the time. Some cells die sooner than others. The rods and cones in the back of your eye, about every 48 hours, they die. Your liver cells, roughly every 8 weeks. The cells that line your gut, about every 4 days, they're dying, and you make new ones. Red blood cells, every 90 days, roughly. So these all different parts of your body are dying all the time, and you're replacing them all the time. You don't have the same eyeball cells that you had when you were born, and that goes for all the cells in your body. You are making a whole new you all the time. So how do you make a new cell? You need raw material. You need amino acids, which are the building blocks for proteins. You need the vitamins and minerals. You got to have the fatty acids, the right fats. So raw materials build cells. That's if you are putting certain raw materials, just think of your house. If you're going to build a new house, you can use some cheap, inappropriate, you know, you're supposed to have a certain level of moisture in your concrete and you don't have enough or you have too much or whatever, the foundation's not going to be right and it's going to crack easy. If you put some old rotten lumber that's been eaten up with termites and doesn't have the right strength and sturdiness, or you're going to go with metal beams instead of lumber, and if those metal beams don't have the right mix of iron or whatever combination of different metals, it's not going to have the strength and the sturdiness to it. Man, you can go through that analogy. It's pretty self-explanatory. You've got to have the right raw materials going into your body to build a cell that's going to work right. I'll use fats as an example. The cell membrane's made of fats, and it needs to be this perfect ratio of fats. In the body, the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 is about 3 to 1, 4 to 1, omega-6 to omega-3. Most Americans are more like 10 to 1, 15 to 1, 20 to 1 omega-6 to omega-3. Way too much omega-6. We're all eating because it's cheap. And you'll see this as a theme in the nutrition pillar, for the love of money, the root of all evil. If food producers can make something more inexpensively, more cheap, they're going to have a better bottom line. And food production is just like everything else in America. It's about the bottom line. What can create more wealth and more opportunity for the stockholders to make a good investment, as Mike Ivey's previous show, which I'm sure talking about these investments. So you can press a bunch of cottonseed with stainless steel presses that have enough energy in them to actually press those hard seeds and get some oil out. And you can do this with corn and get corn oil, and you can do it with soybeans and get the soy oil, and you can do it with rape seed, which is canola oil. So this seed press, as we learned with Sally Fallon when I interviewed her a couple months ago, traditional ancestral presses were stone and wood press, and you could press olive oil, and that's actually a beneficial oil. You could not press these really small hard seeds. That only came around at the turn of the century with this stainless steel press that produced more force. But it turns out these seed oils are highly oxidizable, highly inflammable. So basically you're putting rancid, inflamed, oxidized fats into the body. I mean, Crisco was so nasty and rancid, which is cottonseed oil, they had to bleach it and chemically process it and do all this stuff to it to make it halfway appealing with when you open that Crisco lid up. That's what Crisco is. It's this compressed hydrogenated cottonseed oil, but it was so nasty they had to bleach it and do a bunch of other stuff to it. My point is, I'm not going to belabor this because we have more to talk about. When we can get cheap stuff, that's what food producers are going to do, and they're not going to add ingredients that are beneficial for your health. And we've done that across the board. We've done it with cattle and chickens and cows when we confine them in these small spaces. I mean, we've done a whole show on raw milk versus homogenized, pasteurized milk coming out of a feedlot where these cows are pumped full of antibiotic and growth hormone, and they're genetically bred to produce, I'm not going to quote the number of pounds of milk because I'll get it wrong, but way more milk per cow is produced these days than traditionally because of the genetics and the antibiotics and the hormones. And then they homogenize it, which is breaking all the good healthy fat that's in raw milk. Gets broken up. It's like squeezing fat through a little filter, like you think of the screen on your window. And it breaks all the big healthy fat into these tiny little pieces of fat that are, again, highly oxidizable. You get oxidized LDL when you homogenize this fat. And then pasteurization just kills everything. Yes, it kills the bad bugs. But guess what? There's good bugs in the raw milk, and the good bugs actually secrete chemicals that suppress the bad bugs. There are naturally occurring enzymes and proteins in the raw milk that suppress the bad bugs. But you kill all that. You kill the enzymes. You kill the beneficials. You kill the bad ones. You kill all the probiotic. You kill the good proteins that help you digest the milk. But all for the sake of mass production and more money. And we can talk about grains. We can just go right down the board. So raw materials in the standard American diet are designed for cost savings and convenience and shelf life. Translates to inflammation in your cell. Not only the cell membrane, but all the way through your cell, you're going to be inflamed. Cofactors. The cofactor I'm going to focus on are minerals. Think of minerals. We're going to use the analogy I've used before at the automobile factories, the assembly line up in Michigan. You can bring in the raw materials, and you can have all the inner workings and all the machinery ready to go, even all the workers ready to go in the manufacturing plant to produce that automobile. But those workers need energy, and that power plant needs energy. The lights have got to come on. The machinery has to function and move. That conveyor belt has to go, and the workers have to stand up and work. enzymes are what provide the energy. Enzymes run off minerals, magnesium and copper in particular. Turn all these different enzymes on, and the enzymes do the physical work of assembling all the raw materials into the automobile. You've got to assemble, and I'll use a thyroid hormone as an example. T4, which is your inactive form of thyroid, is made by your thyroid gland in your neck, and it's secreted out into your bloodstream. And then most of it in the liver, that T4 gets converted to T3. The 4 stands for 4 molecules of iodine. And then you've got to snip off one of those molecules of iodine to make it T3. So now you only have 3 molecules of iodine. Well, what snips it is an enzyme, thyroid peroxidase enzyme. Happens to run off magnesium. And that's just one example. You've got to physically alter that thyroid hormone to turn it into an active thyroid hormone. And this happens throughout the body. You're adding molecules to and you're taking molecules away from different substances to make these chemical reactions go. And again, it's minerals that really turn these enzymes on and allow the car to be made in that manufacturing facility. Minerals come from rock and pebble and sand and the dirt in your soil. But those are inorganic minerals on a rock, that calcium and silica and magnesium and copper and all that. To change those minerals into a form that can go into a spinach leaf or an apple or whatever, you've got to have bacteria in the soil to change that mineral from rock into water-soluble form that the plant can take up. Well, the bacteria in the soil live on water droplets in the soil. The water droplets in the soil hang out in these little channels, microscopic channels in the soil. Think of a spongy chocolate cake with all those porous holes. The fungi in the soil is what builds the little channels where the water droplets sit that house the bacteria. You've got to hydrate the soil properly for the bacteria to live, for them to be able to do what they need to do to get the minerals into the food. A plow disrupts the fungi. And if you disrupt the fungi, you disrupt all the porous channels and therefore the bacteria and therefore the mineral content. That's just the plow. Then if you throw in artificial fertilizer, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, that's man-made synthetic form, you artificially lay that down on the ground, then the plant takes that up and you get a greener, bigger, vibrant plant and you get tonnage. You can produce more pounds per acre or tons per acre, which is what a farmer gets paid for, but the nutrient value of that crop is less. So you got tons, you got growth, you got green, but you got less micronutrients. And here's why. That plant, under normal conditions, without man-made synthetic fertilizer, will secrete chemicals out of its roots that will signal and attract and call forth the bacteria in the soil to come to the root. That beet plant, that artichoke plant, that tomato plant needs, let's say, copper. So it's going to secrete a chemical that tells the bacteria that produces copper to come to the root and give it some copper. It's this amazing, beautiful, synergistic relationship. When you artificially subvert that with man-made chemical fertilizer, you miss some of that. So the plow disrupts it, the artificial fertilization disrupts it, and then you have a weaker plant because it grew fast and it grew big and tall and heavy because of the NPK fertilizer, but it doesn't have the micronutrients to have a full defense system in place, so it's more susceptible to bugs, to pests. So now we got to spray it with pesticides. We got to kill all these germs. Well, those pesticides also impact the soil and kill the soil microbes. So the plow disrupts the microbes, the fertilization disrupts the microbes, and then the pesticides disrupt the microbes. And then the big one is the herbicide glyphosate. We've talked about it ad nauseum, so I'm not going to go in depth there, but glyphosate is Roundup. It kills the bugs by disrupting the shikimate pathway, so it kills soil microbe life. And it also chelates your minerals, specifically copper and manganese, but it chelates all of them. Chelate means to grab and not let go of. So again, man-made production and money and all that drove all these artificial means of increasing production. And again, I'm not going to get into Let's Feed the World. We've talked about that at length too. We can feed the world without all these grains, highly processed grains through these ways. So cofactors, minerals, that's what the category we're on. Minerals are the cofactors, and we demineralize the soil, so we're demineralized in our food. It takes 26 apples in 1997 to equal one apple in 1950 as far as the mineral content, and we can go right through with cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, beets, 43 of your top crops, and the mineral depletion. In 1997, a study that came out at University of Texas at Houston, Dr. Davis, looking at 1990s versus 1950s. I'm sure we're worse than that now in 2019. So that's cofactors. Now fuel, talk about fuel real quick. Fuel in the cell. Your cells have to have energy to function. So a white blood cell is going to go gobble up the flu virus so that you don't even know you got the flu. 90% of people exposed to polio never knew they had it back in the day because their immune system was strong and killed it before they had symptoms. We're exposed to bugs all the time, and a highly functional immune system will kill these bugs and we're fine, no problem. But a highly functional immune system requires fuel at the cellular level. That's called ATP. For your brain to function, your brain and your heart are the two organs that require the most fuel because they're the most metabolically active. They require the most energy output because they're working so hard. So you have brain fog, you have memory issues, you've got even depression, you've got dementia. There's all these different brain symptoms. Or heart disease, you've got heart failure, you've got coronary artery disease, you've got dysrhythmias like AFib. When the heart's not functioning right and the brain's not functioning right, but any part of you that's not functioning right, think of at the cellular level, you're not making enough energy. So food is fuel for energy production. You also need oxygen and minerals to make this ATP, this energy. But the fuel component, your cells can use either carbs, which turn into glucose or sugar. So there's this sugar pathway, or fat for fuel. Ancestrally, if you look at all the cultures throughout time, fats, especially from animal-based fats, animal sources of fat, so I'm talking to Weston A. Price here, and if you're not familiar with Weston A. Price, briefly, he was a dentist in the 1920s, 1930s. He and his wife sailed around the world for 20 years, and he would park the boat, and he would get out, and he would live with these different tribes, South Pacific Islanders, Alaskan Eskimos, Native Americans, South America in the jungle in Peru. He'd go to the Orient. He went to Africa. He went to Europe. All these different places 100 years ago. And he would take notes, and he would take samples of their food, and he would send those samples back to his lab in America, and he would study the contents of their food. How much minerals do they have? How much fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K? And what he noted in all these different cultures was they got a lot of good fat and animal-based fats. He did not find one culture that only ate vegetables. He did not find a vegetarian culture. And what he found was there was 10 times more fat-soluble vitamins, specifically retinol, which is vitamin A. And then vitamin D is found with vitamin A always in nature, but it's at a 10-to-1 ratio, 10 retinols to 1 D. And there's other fat solubles. Vitamin K, Dr. Price called the X factor. But anyways, people weren't scared of fat. We went low fat in America in the 1950s, 1960s, after Eisenhower had his heart attack, and it kind of some incomplete science came out. I'll just say that. Incomplete and not fully, not the full truth. And we thought that fat, eating fat, would clog arteries and cause heart attacks. Now it's clear that that's not the case. So we got away from our ancestral eating of lard and butter and heavy cream and raw milk, real milk, not 1% skim milk. Grass-fed beef has lots of omega-3. People don't realize the omega-3 in the fish oil, and you want to eat your salmon and your seafood to get omega-3, which I recommend, and that's great. But there's more omega-3 in a grass-fed roast than there is in salmon. But that omega-3 is in a cow eating what God intended for it to eat, which is grass. You put a cow into a feedlot and feed it a bunch of soy or corn or any grain, that fat's going to flip from omega-3 to omega-6. And that's why Americans, it's not just the seed oils like cottonseed, soy, and corn oil that gives us omega-6 dominance 20 to 1 when it should be 3 to 1. But it's the omega-6 rich adulterated beef and other meats. But anyways, back to the fuel. When you eat fat, you can make 140 molecules of ATP for every molecule of fat that you burn. When you eat carb, you make about 32, 34, 36 at the most ATPs for every molecule of glucose, sugar, carb. Americans consume way too many carbs. Just think of that old food pyramid. The base of that pyramid was grains. You're supposed to have 8 to 12 servings a day, supposedly, to be healthy. And that's not what our ancestors did. The grain wasn't that readily available. We couldn't mass produce it like we do today. Most of our patients, because they're so sick, we need them to make lots of energy and not make much exhaust. So for a time, we have them try to really eliminate the grains and get the carbs super low with the point of trying to bring them to health more quickly. For your average American who's not that inflamed or sick, actually the average American is inflamed and sick. So let's just say for someone who's not as symptomatic, maybe you don't have to be as aggressive as we have to be with our patients to be pretty much no carb and lots of fat. But with our patients, we have to do that. So that's a little side caveat. Depending on how sick you are and where you are in your health journey, you may be able to eat a little more healthy carb. And we'll talk about that in a minute, doing God food versus man food. Healthier carbs, God's original wheat versus man's wheat. But back to fuel, fat for fuel makes lots of energy. Carbs for fuel makes less energy. And fat for fuel burns clean and makes fewer free radicals. Carbs for fuel burns more dirty, makes more free radicals. Free radicals drive inflammation. Last category, and then we'll take a break real quick, are microbiome. So when you eat food, when you're looking at that bite of food today at lunch going into your mouth, think, is this healing me or killing me? So think raw materials, cofactors, fuel, and then microbiome. That's your little bugs in your gut. Are you feeding those guys or are you killing them? If you're eating standard food in a package, then probably you're getting glyphosate, which is Roundup. Glyphosate kills bacteria in your gut, so you want to try to eat organic. If you're eating standard food, you're getting antibiotics. 80% of antibiotics in the world or in America are put into our milk and our cheese and our beef and chicken and all that. So antibiotic-rich foods will kill your microbiome in your gut. Splenda, artificial sweetener, kills 50% of your gut bacteria. Birth control pills do too. Lots of other chemicals do, but standard American food has chemicals, preservatives, artificial stuff. It doesn't nourish your microbiome. We don't eat much fiber anymore. Fiber nourishes the microbiome. Bone broth has tons of collagen that helps to nourish your microbiome. Traditional ancestral ways of eating nourished our microbiome. Standard, quick, convenient, cheap food kills your microbiome. They've studied traditional cultures in Africa and South America, and they've got 20 to 30,000 different species of bacteria in their gut. Your average American maybe has a couple thousand. A sick American is going to be down to like 500 species. We've just totally obliterated the diversity of your microbiome, and I could do a whole show on just a microbiome. There's certain bacteria that impact certain disease states. They have found bacteria that are associated with multiple sclerosis, bacteria associated with asthma, bacteria associated with peanut allergy, bacteria associated with melanoma, bacteria associated with kidney stones. I could go on and on and on, but certain bacteria, if you're missing them, you'll be more prone to these different diseases. So you want diversity of your microbiome. So is the food going in your mouth nourishing your microbiome or killing your microbiome? So that's a summary. I've got more to talk about. We're going to take a break, but remember, raw materials, cofactors, fuel, and microbiome. That's the core of the nutrition pillar. We're going to talk man food versus God food, and then we're going to talk about all the different diets that are out there when we get back. This is Ben Edwards with You're the Cure. Stick with us.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580, of course, with Dr. Ben Edwards and, of course, Veritas Medical. Always check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can go check out past archive programs and pertinent information about Veritas. And right back into it, One of the texts we got in right as we were going into break, Dr. Edwards, was asking about, can you supplement your way to good gut biome health?
You can supplement your way to gut biome improvement, I think.
You don't want to go hardcore organic all the time.
That's better than nothing, I would say. If you're going to take a probiotic, it'll help decrease inflammation in your gut a little bit. It's not really going to impact the population of your gut flora. And if you're eating a bunch of food that's just going to kill your gut flora, I mean, it's going to be maybe two steps forward, one step back, but it could be the opposite. Stress kills it. It's the whole thing. There's no easy button answer. You can't just take a probiotic pill and think this is going to make up for all my poor dietary habits. Mm-hmm. So, I don't want to discourage someone too much, because that's one step in the right direction. You just got to keep going. And that's the point of kind of my show today. I really want to try to hit all this nutrition pillar so people have the aha moments, the light bulbs go off, the motivation comes in, and they realize that food really matters and I need to do more than just supplement my gut biome. Restore is a great product. That's something that helps encourage diversity of gut flora, and it helps close the tight junctions, the leaky gut.
Can you do that while fasting and then not?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you still have some?
No, I think we're out of it.
Oh,
I gave you some and you didn't take it, so we finished it.
Oh, nice.
What I want to reiterate to people is Weston Price, the beauty of his work is he was at this perfect time in our history of mankind where modern food was just starting to creep into some of these cultures. And so there would be villages in, I know one of them that stands out, comes to mind, is Switzerland, the Swiss Alps. He found a village, they were eating just like they'd been eating for hundreds of years, preparing their food and their crops and everything the same way. And they were healthy and strong and good teeth and no cancer, no tuberculosis. And just down the road a little ways at another village that was closer to the port, where they had access to these ships that were bringing enriched white flour and sugar. And they were consuming that, and they had more cavities, more cancer, and tuberculosis. They were dying of tuberculosis. And that was really the only difference, was their food. So people had lost their resiliency and their resistance to tuberculosis and disease in general. So people today are so consumed with germs and measles and bugs and the flu, and oh no, the germ theory, and genes. Oh, all these diseases are genetic, and it's not true. It's just not true. Yes, genes play a part, and yes, germs play a part, but that's not the biggest part. The biggest part is diet and lifestyle. If you have good resiliency built up in you through nutrition, then you can walk through a tuberculosis epidemic no problem. Your body's so strong and resilient, it'll fight the bug and you won't even know it. The bad genes stay turned off when you have the right raw materials, cofactors, fuel, and microbiome. It's the good bugs that help keep your bad genes turned off. The bad free radicals, that's the exhaust coming out of your energy factories in your cell, your mitochondria, that bad exhaust turns on the BRCA gene for breast cancer. So we've got to understand this. It's a lack of cofactors, raw materials, the wrong fuel, the lack of a diverse microbiome that turns on the bad genes. So we've got to renew our minds and understand that food matters. So briefly, man food versus God food. I'm going to use wheat as an example, but you can go right down the list. You can go, I already talked about the animals, grass-fed versus grain-fed and feedlot and pigs living on a concrete floor in a barn versus outside foraging in a pasture. Same with chickens, free-range chickens. When you look at the nutrient contents of animals eating and living the way God intended them to, as opposed to what man has done to alter it, these adulterated seed oils, even coffee. We talked to Andrew Salisbury. I encourage people to go listen to that interview. He produces the world's healthiest coffee. And how? By going back to traditional ways. They have to hand pick it. Why do they hand pick it? Because a machine can't differentiate between a coffee bean that's mature and ready for roasting and a coffee bean that's a couple weeks early or a couple weeks late. When you have a machine just mass pick all these coffee beans, and then you roast a combination of immature, mature, and overly mature coffee beans. You have a combination of all that, and you roast it. You get these bad chemicals coming out that can create cancer. So he doesn't do that. He handpicks all his coffee beans when it's just at the right stage to produce the most health benefit. That's why I drink his coffee. But we're going to talk about wheat because it's the best example. God's original wheat's called einkorn. It has 14 chromosomes, and it grows to be about 4 foot tall. And it has a lot of nutrients in it, especially if it's grown in soil that has fungus and bacteria and all the things I mentioned earlier. And especially if you grind it yourself and you get the wheat germ and you get the oil that's in it and you get it stone ground, and it's very, very nutritious. That is the wheat of the Bible and the wheat of our ancestors. That is not the wheat that we're consuming today. So the einkorn wheat has been hybridized and hybridized and hybridized over and over and over and over multiple times. And the big hybridization coming around 1970-ish. Dr. Norman Borlaug won the Nobel Prize for this hybridization that changed the starch content of this wheat is one thing that it did. It also increased the growth of the wheat. It's dwarf wheat, so it only grows 18 inches tall, and it's drought-resistant, wind-resistant, and its production, the yields are tenfold more. That's why it won the Nobel Prize. But this new modern wheat, I call man wheat, has 46 chromosomes, a whole new blend of gluten proteins that the body doesn't recognize anymore. It's this new variety of gluten. It's not the wheat and the gluten that Jesus and your great-great-great-grandparents were exposed to. So it's different gluten, different starch content. The starch in this wheat changes to sugar very, very rapidly. The amylase and the saliva in your in your mouth will start to change this and break this carb, this starch and modern wheat down into sugar within 5 seconds of you chewing on that whole wheat bread, tortilla and pasta and crackers. It doesn't matter if it's whole wheat or white bread, it's still the same wheat, and it changes into sugar very, very quickly. That sugar spikes your insulin. Insulin tells you to store fat. Insulin drives inflammation. Sugar clogs up your carburetor, your energy production factory in the cell. It produces all this smog, all this black smoke coming out your tailpipe, drives inflammation, oxidative stress, just from the man-made version of hybridized wheat. And that's not even getting into the Roundup that's sprayed on the wheat and other modifications we do when we're processing the wheat. We've got to get this guy on the show. I forget his name. If he's listening, he could call me. He produces a tortilla. He's in Plainview. It's I think native tortillas maybe is what it's called. And he discovered this chemical. Well, he didn't discover it. He got educated that there's a particular chemical, and I forget the name, they use in the processing of the wheat to preserve it and bleach it. And that chemical specifically causes type 2 diabetes in lab rats. It's the chemical they use to make a lab rat diabetic so they can study diabetes. It's crazy, and it's in the wheat, but not in his wheat. So he uses a wheat that doesn't have that part, at least. But there's so many pieces to this wheat story, from the new gluten, these chemicals they put in it, the starch content, the Roundup that's sprayed on it, all these different things drive inflammation. Bottom line, every disease is inflammation, whether it's Alzheimer's, heart attacks, cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, you know, race for the cure of whatever disease you want to say, it's all inflammation. And wheat and sugar drive it probably the most.
What do you think about the organic bread brands that'll have the whole sprouted, or it claims to have whole sprouted?
So organic, that's good because you're not getting the glyphosate. Glyphosate kills your gut bacteria, chelates your minerals, and gives you leaky gut. So you're going to minimize that effect, and that's good. The sprouted part is going to break down some of the glutens, make it easier to digest. So that's good. So again, a step in the right direction, but keep stepping in that right direction. If all I had to eat was an organic, and we didn't even talk about enriched, but if it was organic, enriched sprouted bread, I'd eat it occasionally, probably not. But if it was einkorn, then yeah, I would say go for it. But still, I make it occasional, and occasionally I'd fast from it. Real quick, though, I've got to mention iron fortification. That iron drives inflammation. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because Morley and I have done probably 25 shows on this. Y'all can go listen to it, or you're probably tired of hearing it. Iron kills. It mixes with oxygen, especially when you don't have enough bioavailable copper, and it rusts you from the inside out. So there are like 10 different things in modern man wheat that will drive inflammation and kill you. That's one example. of why we try to get people to eat more ancestrally. And real quick, I've got to talk about carb versus, because wheat obviously is carb. Carb versus ketogenic. Ketogenic just means high fat, low carb. Ketogenic's a new big thing. I mean, it's been around for 100 years. We've used this diet to treat seizures and other things because it's really, really good to decrease brain inflammation if you're eating a ketogenic diet. If you're eating a high-fat, low-carb diet, you create ketones. Ketones are just byproducts of burning fat for fuel. And the brain loves ketones, and it drives down inflammation so seizures get better. And other things get better too. And ancestrally, Dr. Price, when you look at all the folks around the globe, a lot of their months out of the year, they would be more of a ketogenic type of eating. They would be fasting, which encourages your own body's fat cells to be burned. When you fast, you'll burn fat for fuel, your own fat. Even if you're trim, you'll be forced to burn fat for fuel, and that makes ketones. Fasting is exceedingly beneficial for us. So the ketogenic diet, high-fat diet, the right fats, of course, fasting occasionally, all that is super beneficial. However, ancestrally, people ate grains too at times, and they ate fruit, which has sugar and carb in it. They ate these sprouted grains. They ate, but it wasn't adulterated man grain, man food. So you've got to be very, very careful with carb as a modern American. You got to be selective. You got to be smart. You got to be educated about how you're going to consume your carb. I'll use myself for an example. I'm 40 something. I forget. I have a birthday tomorrow.
Ooh, I forget how old. Early birthday.
But I'm mid 40-ish, somewhere in there. I don't have any symptoms really. As long as I'm doing the right stuff, I definitely don't have any diagnoses or take any meds. I would, what you would probably would say is healthy. So I can eat carb here and there, and I can eat it in moderation, but then I'll fast from it at times. It's definitely not going to be the majority of my diet. It's not going to be every single day. Fast from carbs. It's not going to be three times a day. It's not going to be start my day with cereal and whole wheat toast and a sandwich at
steel
lunch and steel cut oats, yeah.
With sugar.
And spaghetti that night. I mean, that's a standard diet. I'm not going to do that even though I'm healthy. But I'll occasionally I'll have, like at the farmer's market this week, and there was a lady with stone ground organic corn tortillas. She even had some empanadas. She was making tamales, but it's all organic. I might have that, you know, a little splurge. I'm not going to look at that empanada and say, no way, I'm not having that ever. You know, this isn't a law. Mm-hmm. This isn't thou shalt not ever eat wheat the rest of your life or you'll die. It's not that. Don't be under that deception. But if I had rheumatoid arthritis, tons of brain fog, my A1C, which is my 3-month blood sugar average, was high, you know, then no, I'm not going to eat that empanada. I'm going to do the things to reverse all those symptoms and inflammation, and I'm not going to eat carb so I can get that done. So you've got to just look at where are you on the health spectrum. And real quick, just a few minutes we have left, the different diets. I wrote about this in my newsletter for our members. There's an antihistamine diet where you avoid foods that have histamines. There's an anti-lectin diet. That's Dr. Gundry. Avoid foods with lectins. There's the anti-nightshades. Nightshades are peppers, tomatoes, other foods. There's certain chemicals in these foods. They call them nightshade chemicals that drive inflammation. So histamines, oxalates, lectins, gluten, nightshades, eat right for your blood type, mm-hmm. all these different diets out there that will drive inflammation in certain patients. And when they quit eating the nightshade or quit eating the lectins or quit eating the histamines, they feel better. Great. Don't eat those and feel better. But don't just stay there. It's like someone that brings me a food allergy test and they're allergic to 30 different foods. Okay, you can avoid those 30 foods and eat 30 different other foods. We'll come back in 6 months and do another test, and you're going to be allergic to your new 30 foods you've been eating because you didn't deal with the root problem. The root problem is leaky gut, not enough stomach acid to break down all these foods, not enough microbiome. Microbiome, the bacteria in your gut, produce enzymes that break the foods down. The bacteria in your gut produce dozens and dozens of enzymes that break down food. Human beings only produce like maybe 6 or 7 enzymes to break food down. So you need diverse microbiome to break the food down. You need to break down the histamine, oxalates, lectins, glutens, nightshade chemicals. All these chemicals driving inflammation should never, ever cross into your bloodstream and trigger your immune system to turn on and cause inflammation and cause an allergy response.
And even kids can have leaky gut, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the cells that line your gut, your intestines, should be tightly sealed. Think of a water hose. A water hose has a hole at the top and a hole at the bottom, and that's it. As opposed to a soaker hose. A soaker hose has a million tiny little porous, those little water droplets soak through. That's leaky gut. Your gut should not be leaky. It should be tightly sealed. And properly digested food, and it's properly digested when you have enough stomach acid. Stomach acid secretions get compromised when you're under stress and eating sugar. So, but proper stomach acid triggers proper gallbladder and pancreatic enzymes to be secreted, and then proper microbiome diversity, you'll create all these good enzymes by your bacteria. You'll break all your food down. No problem. You turn that steak into steak soup. You break proteins down to amino acids. Amino acids are transported across the cell membrane in your gut appropriately into your bloodstream, and your immune system will never react to an amino acid. That's a building block of the body. You're not going to have an allergic reaction to amino acids. People are having allergic reactions to lectins, glutens, oxalate, histamine, eat right for your blood type, all these things, because of leaky gut, not enough enzymes, not enough stomach acid. Fix the problem. Get your stomach acid production up. Get your enzymes up. Quit stressing and eating a standard diet full of antibiotics and pesticides and all the things that are blowing your gut wide open like Roundup. So you can be on these diets if you want, because they will make you feel a little better if you find out you're sensitive to lectins. But don't just stop there. Keep going. And when it comes to vegetarian versus vegan, like Dr. Price said, he never saw anybody be completely healthy that only ate vegetables only. Vegetables are awesome. I recommend them. I have vegetarian cookbooks. I want good recipes on how to eat vegetables. But it's not either or. I don't think you need to stay that extreme all the time. I think we need a variety. We need to mix it up. We need to change different seasons of the year, different seasons of your life. Change it up and occasionally fast.
Real quick, excellent show as usual. Thank you, and Dr. Ben, and ask him if he'll cover BPH someday.
Benign prostatic hypertrophy. That's inflammation and swelling of the prostate, overgrowth of the prostate. And yes, we will. Just remind me down the road, because the next three shows I'm going to try to hit the other three pillars: hydration, movement, and peace. Today was nutrition. Hopefully I covered most of what a newbie would need to know, and even a long-term listener would need to know, to get motivated and remember why we need to eat real food, not man food, God food, and occasionally not eat. So go be well. And it starts with nutrition, and it's going to end with peace. So stay tuned for future shows when we talk about those.
Don't forget to mention the expo. Dr. Edwards is going to be out there. He's going to be speaking. You can go and meet him, shake his hand, pick his brain, listen to what he has
Lubbock
to say.
Lubbock Wellness Expo, January
11th.
11th.
Mm-hmm. Just in time for New Year's resolutions. A lot of really cool people.
All day Saturday on January.
Holy Cow Beef is sponsoring it. Humbly Fed is sponsoring it. Dr. Stephen Dalton. So there's a lot of really cool, interesting people. We're going to have ladies speak on Young Living Essential Oils as well.
So great speakers, great booths, great opportunity to learn about wellness. It's awesome.
Yeah, we've got like a lady who owns her own beehives selling bee products. Paula Womack,
really?
She's pretty fun.
Beehives.
We've got paint nail bee bar.
Pollen full of good vitamin Bs.
Yeah,
paint
nail
bar.
Is
she bringing the bees to the expo?
I asked her if she would consider bringing one of her beehives, because she said she has a case that she could put it in where you could like watch
I'll watch them make the honey.
You might ask the pie bar, because one of my office staff went to the pie bar looking for a ketogenic option, and the lady didn't know what it was, but she emailed back to our office staff and said, hey, teach me about this. We want to do a ketogenic pie. I don't know if they've actually done
that's
it yet.
That's cool. The pie bar is right next to my Sweat Hut infrared saunas.
Is Sweat Hut going to be there?
They are. Tracy is bringing one of her infrared saunas. Catherine and I go once a week and go do that. Oh,
cool.
My gosh, that's so much fun.
It's going to be the place to be on Saturday, January 11th.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it is. It's going to be so much fun.
All right. Thanks a lot. We appreciate that, Dr. Edwards, and we'll see you back here next week. We'll hit that second pillar on the show. And so
hydration.
Water. All right. We'll do it. Stick around. We've got more to go right on the other side. Thanks a lot.